This episode of the Android Central Podcast is brought to you by ShopAndroid.com. Save 10% on your entire order by using the coupon code AC10 at checkout.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. I gotta fix my hair. Whoa, how about that? For Friday, what is today? I have no idea what today is. November 7th.
7, 2014.
How goes it? How it goes? I'm Phil Dickinson. I edit AndroidCentral.com, and I brought my friends. You probably can't hear them. The Blue Angels are flying right now, apparently. The air show has returned. It's the homecoming air show here. The Blues are stationed here. So if you hear F-18s, that's what that is. I'm not under attack. Repeat, I'm not under attack.
We're here to deliver you some freedom, Mr. Nickinson.
Sound of freedom, all right. How goes it, Jerry?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Andrew Martinick in Seattle.
Hello from Seattle.
And Alex Dowie in England.
Hey, hey, everyone.
Before we go any farther, I think we need to give Richard Devine a big what's up and congrats on the new kid.
Yes.
Richard has a brand new baby boy. What was the name? Oliver?
Oliver.
Cool.
He resisted, British name. Resisted the temptation to name it Little Richard. I would not have been able to do that. My that child and wife would have hated me forever because I would have named it Little Richard before she was recovered enough to decide.
So if you're a fan of Richard on the podcast or anywhere else in general, drop him a line and tell him congrats because he's not at all proud. Oh, no.
And he should be. The kid's adorable. Oh, yeah. Make him show you pictures.
It's fun watching somebody else have fun with this stuff, especially because I know what's coming next. So we can preview the next 4 or 5 years easily. So congrats to Richard.
Yep. My wife looked at the picture and said, we should have another kid. I couldn't run fast enough.
Would have paid to see that, actually. Oh, man. So we got kind of a weird week this week, I guess. Nothing too huge has happened, right? I mean, Android 5 code has sort of started. I think I saw Alex talking there, and that's unfortunate for him, because I was still going. Android 5 has been released, sort of. You can't do much with it unless you can do much with it.
Unless you have a device that is running it, in which case you already had it.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll make Jerry explain how this works, but yeah, if you have a Nexus 9, you have Android L, Lollipop. Those of us that have the other devices also have it. And what, Jerry, the code has been pushed to AOSP?
Yeah, AOSP Master has Lollipop in it now. I don't think it's 100% complete with the telephony stuff. But it's there. Telephony. Hey, stop. Who's doing this? I'm sure there's enough there that your favorite hacker is going to have a ROM for your phone over the weekend.
No, I've already seen some, yeah.
Yeah, and they'll probably be really janky. Don't think this is what L is going to be like, because they're not working with everything they need to work with.
Andrew says my video looks horrible. It looks fine to me. Does it look fine to you guys?
No, but I wasn't going to say anything.
You guys are awful.
I'm respectful.
I'm semi-respectful and say it privately rather than on the podcast live.
Well, it looks great to me, and that's really all that matters. I don't know.
Anyway.
If somebody watching wants to throw in the Q&A how my video looks, I mean, I don't know what I can do about it.
We'll find out how you look in 20 seconds when they...
I'll turn my VPN off, I guess, and see if that helps. There's code. There's no OTAs yet. We got factory images for the devices that are, you know, for the N9 and the Nexus Player. But, again, if you...
The Nexus Player was kind of interesting, though, because nobody really has a Nexus Player because they got so, you know... There were still, what, 3 or 4 weeks out of the Play Store when they first went up, so that was kind of interesting.
I have seen several people on Google Plus showing pictures of the new Nexus Player they got in the mail.
Oh, yeah.
I did not know anybody, you know, was getting them this early, but I've seen two of them.
Hmm. I'm liking it. I mean, let's talk about that for a minute. I'm liking it. It's been interesting. You know, a bunch of the other reviews I saw didn't like it, and said it was half-baked, but I actually kind of think this is one of the more complete products we have out of the three, at least as software goes. You want to say it's limited? All right, apparently I'm fuzzy. That's my face. That's my beard.
Phil's been fuzzy for several weeks now.
I think it's limited by design. I think that's what they wanted to give us for right now.
And that's why
$99, don't forget.
Exactly. And that's why I was kind of a little hesitant about all this micro USB stuff. Yes, it has a micro USB port, and yes, we finally got around to plugging in some proper stuff. And, you know, yes, it can read a flash drive, and you can actually, the cooler thing I think is that you can do USB Ethernet with it, which is probably going to be a bigger deal for people.
Yep. The uncool thing is that you have to do that to get Ethernet. That's the one thing I'm going to agree with all the haters out there and say that it should have had an Ethernet jack on the back.
But again, you're selling a device for that amount of money. Any saving you can make, by not including extra connectors and stuff, is going to be...
I guess, but, I mean, my Asus Cube was only $119, and it has one. I think one of my Google TVs was cheap and has one.
Well, I mean, it's not there, and
the
for whatever
TV
reason.
The Fire TV has it, right? Ethernet.
Which one?
Fire TV.
Yes, I believe it does. I'm trying to remember.
I don't have a Fire TV. I don't know. Do I need to get one?
I never plugged Ethernet into mine either because, you know, it's 20 feet away from the router, so it doesn't really matter to me. But, you know, for some people, I understand. Ethernet is a thing.
So, I mean, there's that. I mean, it's got like 77 apps at launch. Now, the fun thing I've been doing is occasionally you can sideload apps, and that's fine, but you can also just install them through Google Play through the web interface. And, you know, some things work, some don't. But once you get them in there, there's no guaranteeing that the app is going to work at all. You know, I can put the AC app on it, but I can't get past, like, the first little middle screen. Where's my remote control? I was going to say I can fire it up. So, I mean, there's a limited amount of that sort of hackery you can do right now without apps being sort of transitioned over for Android TV, right?
Right. Your user interface on some apps is waiting for an input that you can't do on the TV, so...
That and anything you sideload, unless the app has been updated here, you can see it now. Unless it's been updated, it's not actually going to show in the launcher, is the thing. Like, I've got other apps installed here, but you can't actually see them in this list. You have to go into the settings and go into the apps and
the
settings. And right.
The app's not meant to be on there in the first place. You don't want it, you know, automatically being
installed.
Carousel.
No, we're giving Google too much credit. It's just because it needs a different asset to show at that resolution. It's not Google didn't plan this.
But it's good that it doesn't show up there, right, no matter what the reason is.
It's a pleasant mistake.
I wouldn't call it a mistake. They're pretty clear. Hey, if you want your app to show up in the launcher on Android TV, you know, here are the things you need to do to get your app to work in Android TV.
Well, okay. Mistake was not the correct word, but it...
Yeah. But, you know, like, here's the file explorer I was showing earlier, and you have to open it through the settings, and it works, and there it is, and you know, I can plug stuff in and use it, and you know, you can play. That's going to be crazy. Watch it. I'm going to play a video of Android TV on Android TV. Whoa. Android TVception. So, yeah, and it's been a little wonky every now and then. Recommendations aren't showing up. It's that weird time of year, and you guys will back me up on this, I think, where Google has so many things going on at once, like things just kind of break randomly every now and then. Or is that
so
just
it's
me?
Like every time of year.
All right, fine. Am I still fuzzy? Have I gotten any better yet?
No, you're...
No, apparently you're still pretty fuzzy.
You're fuzzy. It's a good look for you. I've seen you in person. Fuzzy's okay.
It'll be fun to watch. I'm enjoying it. And it's... I think it's a product. It's actually not bad. Like playing Asphalt. I'm going to play Asphalt right now during the podcast. You can't stop me. And you won't be able to see anyway because I look so bad. So I'm just going to stand here. Oh, I'm going to play it in the reflection of myself there. How about that?
Now, this is not going to work out very well.
But, you know, it's fun for playing Asphalt. My kids have had a good time playing Badland and Leo's Fortune on it. I need to turn the volume down, though. That's the one thing I really want. I really want to be able to use the remote to turn down the volume, and I can't.
And if you look at it from the perspective of somebody who, you know, one of the five people who hasn't purchased a Chromecast and is listening to this podcast, I mean, it's $35, you know, so you have $35 of that $100 price is as a Chromecast, and the other $65 is kind of this thing that you know, works for some things, but, you know, clearly has a lot more potential than what you see there now.
That's a good way of looking at it, isn't it? The comparison with the Chromecast, because if you think about that, that's the amount of money you can be investing anyway. For that additional functionality, you're actually not really paying a whole lot.
No, you're not. And especially, I mean, a lot of apps like Asphalt, you know, all the money I've put into this game, and it's a giant in-app purchase suck. You know, you get it all back right then, right? So I don't have to buy it all over again. I don't have to do all the in-app purchases again. It's just all right there. And that's,
we saw the game catalog get built, you know, right before our eyes on when I reviewed the Fire TV right after it came out, and it had, you know, three apps, and by the time, or three games, I should say, and by the time I finished the review, the number of games is already at like 20-something. And so all it takes is a little bit of time, and on the Fire TV at least, all it was, you know, change some of the on-screen prompts that say tap here or, you know, tap this or tap that to press B to go back and, you know, press this and hit, click start instead of tap here. And then, you know, it runs because it's, you know, just making an Android app, you know, be a little more friendly for the controller.
You know what I'm waiting for? Because this is more than the Chromecast and it has its own operating system that has its own connections to the cloud, I'm waiting for a good second screen experience, like some sort of maybe like IMDb tie-in while you're watching a movie or something. That's got to be at least on a roadmap somewhere with APIs where a company like, let's say, Netflix is a bad example because there's really, you can only fast forward or pause or stop. But something that you, while you're watching it on your big screen, you have a second screen experience on the phone in your hand.
Does Google Play Movies do that yet? I know they do it for when you're watching the movie on the tablet. They do kind of a similar X-ray thing.
You can pause it. You get Prime information on people. You've got to imagine that would be something they're working on, right? That's the hard work is already done from Google's perspective. All that information is already there. It's just a case of bringing it to a different screen.
And you're on the same network, signed in the same account. It can't be that difficult for one device to know what the other device is doing.
Didn't they announce something on that this week? Oh, look at that. I'm totally watching myself there.
I'm not sure if they... I can't remember if that was new stuff on the phone or tablet you're watching or second screen. I'm looking right now.
I want to think that I thought this up myself, but maybe I didn't.
I just don't use Play Movies all that often, so that would be...
That's because you're a hater.
No, that's because Netflix is a flat rate and has things that we want to watch already.
Doesn't have everything. Oh, look at that. There I go. Whee! This is kind of...
Hey, there you go, Jerry. So Jerry might actually have just come up with this, or he read this already. Second screen info cards with Chromecast. View actor and soundtrack information on your phone or tablet synchronized with what's happening on screen.
Well, there you go.
No need to pause.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, and they can extend that a lot now.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Nexus player and any Android TV has got a bigger brain behind it than the Chromecast does.
Yep.
And that was an awesome flip, Phil.
Can you actually see me?
I've got your video highlighted so I can watch you play.
This is actually like working better than I thought it would.
Oh, your video's better now as well.
Is it better?
Yep.
Oh, yep. Yep.
Hey, quick. Here's your chance. Barrel roll time.
Oh. I know, it's a little tough to see. Yeah, I mean, I'm having a good time playing games on this. I really am, and I think it's totally worth the extra $60. And when you start complaining about the number of apps on this right now, I mean, you say that kind of in a vacuum, like it's never going to get any more, and you know that's just not true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no way that's not true. So,
right, and with a price like $99, there's a lot more people that can pick up a $99 you know, box for their kids to play games on than a $300 tablet or $400 tablet, you know. So there's a good chance that if this gets out there, and of course there's going to be more Android TV devices than just the Nexus Player, that, you know, we're going to see the game catalog jump.
And you know what? It's a nice mix of games. I don't know how well everybody can see them, but, you know, it's a nice mix of stuff that, like, my kids would want to play, which for me is one reason for this purchase, I think, because it's something that's in the living room that everyone can hang out with and play. NBA TV is going to be interesting to see. The video quality on that was kind of crap when I looked yesterday, but But like this PBS app, you know, my kid can go watch Curious George all day long now and all the other PBS shows he watches.
Is that Univision I see on there too?
No, UVideo's Android TV.
Oh, okay, no, that's. I just saw the fuzzy.
Oh, that is Univision. Yeah. Oh,
cool. I know some people that'll be very happy to see that.
TED TV, you know, Plex is on there. Plex for Plex Pass, which is not something I use, but I know a lot of people do. I mean, there, you know, that's another reason it was killing me. Everybody asking about all this USB stuff. It's like there's a lot there now, guys. Let's not. And I get that not everybody has one yet, but let's not pretend that this thing is dead in the water without USB support, because I think there's a whole lot of functionality in here.
And that's just kind of not the point.
Yeah.
In more ways than most things are just not the point of plugging in hard drives to random devices just because you can.
Yeah, I think people are much more disappointed in the storage size than not being able to expand it. It wouldn't have been an issue if there had been, say, a 16 or 32 gig option. But again, this is...
That's going to be the thing. All right, so yeah. Let's go see how much space I have right now, shall we?
Well, the thing is if you just want to watch streams, the Chromecast is fine. If you want more and you actually want to sit and play games on your big TV... They need to make one with a 500 gigabyte hard drive in it, period.
Games are the issue there, yeah, not streaming media.
Yeah.
I completely get all the complaints about lack of storage, because on this device, that's absolutely right.
And honestly, I think I should have been a little harder on that in the review. I mean, I know I said it's not much and just kind of left it at that, but I completely agree. Because it's not future-proofed at all. And that's one of the things, you know.
Are just huge.
Yeah, whenever I buy any sort of hard drive, I always pay a little bit more than I anticipate, you know, that I really wanted to future-proof it just a little bit. Just a little bit. But yeah, 6 is not enough, period. I have 1.8 gigabytes left on this, by the way.
6 is probably enough for me or you. I don't think you play a lot of big games, and I play them on a console. I'm not really worried about playing them on Android TV. But for people that want a gaming system that runs Android in their living room, 6 is not even enough to get started. It's a non-starter. And this probably isn't the device for you. It's a shame, but don't buy it.
Right.
It's
so
not going to work for you.
I mean, the big thing is that the fix is Google should have put more storage in it, not Google should improve USB on the go support to plug in the hard drive.
No, because that's not a solution really for most people.
Right. Buy this $100 thing and then another $100 for a USB hard drive that you can put things on.
Again, this is Google's reference version. There's nothing stopping from somebody like Samsung to build one that has 3 terabytes of storage in there if they want. I mean, if there's enough demand, I hope somebody will build one.
Well, and the thing is, consoles have been able to cheap out on this on storage, you know, put 2 gigs in there or something because you're running games off of disks. But this doesn't have that, you know, feature. You have the internal storage, and you're going to be stuck at some point saying, do I want to download this movie to watch later because my internet's slow, or do I want to install this 1.2 gig game?
Yeah, well, we haven't looked at, I don't think, in detail what you can actually do with USB on the go yet, have we? Like, you can't, you know, move certain parts of apps to USB.
No, you can't.
You can't unless
you read media off of it, right?
Yeah.
I figured, yeah.
Yeah.
Your apps are going to need assets in the /SD card directory, and that's internal storage on the Nexus Player.
Right.
So you're kind of screwed.
Or it's working exactly as it's supposed to.
Right. This is for me. I've been a little busy, but I did get it out of the box and hook it up and go through the setup. I love the UI, and I'm like, you know, I don't have to watch Netflix and all this other crap on my PlayStation anymore. I kind of like the way this works. So that's what I'm going to use.
Go ahead, Jerry.
I wish it had some features like HDMI pass through and stuff, so I could, you know, work a little bit better with one remote. But there's no real showstoppers that make me regret the $99 I spent for one.
And the biggest thing that I think is, like I said, it's only $65 more than a Chromecast, and you get the functionality of a remote, which for a lot of people, that's, you know, a big deal, not having, you know, we know that the second screen stuff is cool with your phone, and, you know, being able to have anybody use a phone or a tablet as a remote is cool, but sometimes, you know, Phil doesn't want to hand a Nexus 7 to his kids to use as a remote every time. You can just hand them the little cheap remote, and then they can navigate the interface, which is nice.
I'm disappointed in the software remote on phones. It's just not good.
It's a little messed up. Let's just say it. It sucks.
Yeah. And that's a little, I mean, maybe they'll update it this week. Well, I just got an update the other day for bug fixes, but yeah.
Didn't fix that bug where it flickers and jumps around so you can't even use it.
No, that's the Nexus. I think that's the Nexus 6 lock screen doing that, actually.
You're probably right.
Yeah. So I can't, you know, blame the app on that.
And you know, it's not even commercially available yet.
Right.
So,
but it's, you know, it's a thing.
Yes. Well, and they want you to give your impressions for people, you know, that are on the fence about buying it. You would think they would want all the software to be right.
I have no problem recommending this. I think, and that's kind of where I was going in the review, right? Like, here's this thing, here's what it does. It's only $99. And I get that $99 is nothing, but it's also not $300.
Right.
It's not $400. And it will get a little better, I think. I mean, they will add things to it. I think it's really good for what it does right now. I mean, that it can play Asphalt as well as it does, for me, is almost worth it. God, I hate that game. So, the gameplay is so good.
Somebody take the Nexus player away from Phil so he stops spending money on it.
The game is so good. No, I've spent way too much money on that. I'm not giving them anymore. It's ridiculous. Well,
it's bad enough. I had to stop playing it because I could see me spending $40, $50 every few months in that stupid game.
Which is brilliant on their part. I get that. But, ugh. Man. Is that enough on the Nexus player?
Well, yes or no, Phil? Just flat out, yes or no?
Yes, absolutely.
Because that's important. I mean, we said a lot of things about it that we, you know, made it sound like we didn't like it. But I think in the end, it's the same cost as taking somebody out for dinner and one movie. You've got something that can stream lots of movies, if you think of it that way.
People have bought monster HDMI cables to cost that much.
Yeah.
Christopher has a good question in the Q&A here. Do you think Android TV could become the default smart TV interface? For a lot of TVs in the next year, it's going to, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it might not be this exact UI, especially.
I hope it does.
Recommendations. I mean, we saw other manufacturers just running Android with their own skin on it just to do this kind of thing anyways.
Yeah, pretty much.
Why not just take this as a package already without monkeying with it?
It's going to depend on Google's ability to sell this to manufacturers and everyone else involved in the whole TV process in a way that they couldn't with Google TV, and that's still the unknown.
So well, no, I mean, they already have. It's coming. I'm pulling it up right now, so I get exactly who it is. But
I mean, Google TV was supposed to be that kind of thing, too.
It was, yeah. It's not. I mean, you can't go out and buy this just in a TV right now. You will be able to in the future, I guarantee you, but... Yes. It's not, you know, we can't predict that just yet.
Wasn't it Panasonic and Toshiba that have announced they're going to be selling?
Yeah, I forget who. They mentioned it again last week at the thing I was at. But I know. Yeah, it's absolutely going to be built in. And I tell you, what's going to be interesting is because you have LG doing WebOS at the same time.
And Samsung's pretty deep into their smart TV stuff already, too.
Well, I know Toshiba has even built a development board that runs Android TV for people that want to build apps for Toshiba televisions. So... That sounds like they're pretty serious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm flipping through the Q&A, see if there's any more Nexus player stuff. Phil is fuzzy. I unplugged the USB Ethernet, and then it got better.
Really?
It actually wasn't running on it, though. Well, it might have been.
This is why Google doesn't do USB Ethernet.
Yeah, I mean,
Hangout, apparently.
Don't do podcasts and USB Ethernet on your Nexus player. I don't know.
It was stealing all your data.
Stop it. All right, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk some more about the Nexus 9. How about that? All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick minute here and talk about lynda.com. That's LYNDA.com. And it's quickly become one of my favorite sites this year. Lynda is an easy and affordable way to help you learn. It's that simple. You can instantly stream thousands of courses created by experts on software, web development, photography, graphic design, and more. And that includes, you ready for this? Android development, Android app development. It's very, very cool. If you want to get into it, this is one of the best ways to start at this point. There's fresh content. New courses are added daily. They work with industry experts and software companies to provide timely training, and often at the same time that new releases are, in fact, released. You get easy learning. I mean, it's high quality, easy to follow video tutorials. It's not like I'm fumbling around trying to show you something. These are people who get paid to do this stuff for a living, real money. So they know what they're talking about, and they make it easy to understand. Courses are broken into bite-sized pieces so you can learn at your own pace, learn from start to finish, or just hop in and get a quick answer, which is really what I like to do. They have great tools that include transcripts and playlists and certificates of completion. From beginners to advanced, they have courses for all levels, and they have mobile apps as well, so you can watch while you're on the go. You can watch while you're at home sitting on the couch with a tablet. And one low monthly price of $25 gets you unlimited access to more than 100,000 video tutorials. I dare you to watch them all. Try it. And if you want, they have a premium plan that will let you watch offline at your own leisure. Very, very cool. New courses recently include simple Android development tools, Android Studio First Look, and building and monetizing game apps for Android. In fact, we've worked out a deal with Lynda to get you a special offer. You can try all their courses free for 7 days. Just go to lynda.com/AndroidCentral. That's LYNDA.com/AndroidCentral. And you can try more than 100,000 courses free for 7 days. Go do it. Tell them I sent you. Okay, let's talk Nexus 9, because we've got another week under our belt since we last talked about it, and Jerry's been playing with it now, and I just love the looks he gets on his face.
Well, I'm just, right now, I'm kind of happy. Every time I pick it up, I've got a new app that's updating.
Oh, yeah?
That's a good thing. I just got another update for Google Drive. I don't know if it's one I missed or if there's something
new. App updates have been crazy the last couple of weeks. There's been a lot of them.
And when you're using the Nexus 9, you see that we need them. So that's why I'm extra happy to see them coming at this pace.
All right, so give me your two-minute Jerry's take on the Nexus 9.
If the Nexus 9 were $199, I would tell everybody in the world to run out and buy as many of them as they can afford.
Why?
Because it does a lot of things really, really well. I think you'll appreciate the new hardware. The screen is, I'm going to call the screen great. It's not the best screen I've ever seen. It's nowhere near as nice as the Tab S.
All right, well, hang on. Let's start there, because light bleed has been something you've seen in every review. You're going to see it in our review.
Right. Mine has horrible light bleed, but unless I'm in the dark or watching a movie on that horrible 4.3 aspect ratio with gigantic letterboxes, I don't notice it. I don't see it. Lollipop is bright and white now. It's not black.
Let's back up and tell people what light bleed is.
An LCD panel has LEDs behind it to brighten it up. Some panels, I think it was the Kindle Fire HDX, use a blue one. A blue set of LEDs, and they have this weird blue ring around the display, but most use white LEDs. And if you don't have the gap where the display itself and the glass
meet, you keep talking. I'm going to show where you're talking about.
Okay, here. Right. There, not all of your screen is display. There are bezels. If the spot where the bezel and the screen meet, and they're not on the same plane, one is under another, but the LEDs can leak through there.
I can see it like right where the bezel starts to give out and you have the display. That's where you see this not bright, but this white light.
And it looks
in contrast to whatever's on the screen.
Right. It makes weird spotlight smears come from the edges in towards the center. And my unit is pretty bad with the light bleed. It's the worst I've ever seen on a device. And if it was not a review unit, it would be something that I would return. And that's the good thing. If you get one that the light bleed is that bad, you just return it. These could be first-run defects. They have to tune the equipment. It could just be I got the short end of the stick, and a lot of other reviewers just got one that has more than what is acceptable. Every screen, every device with an LCD screen will have light bleed. It's unavoidable. You may have to look hard to find it, but it's there. I don't think that's a reason to pan the tablet because mine has light bleed. That's my position on this. I'm sure there are plenty out there that don't have as much light bleed as mine, and I imagine there are ones out there that have even more than mine.
I've noticed it on mine, but I don't think I would describe it as dire as you are.
Well, and that's because mine is pretty bad. That's I think, the difference. Mine is bad enough that if I'm on any screen that's dark, I notice it if it's a dark color. If I'm watching a movie with the lights down, it's distracting. So mine is more than what is acceptable. It sounds like yours is probably acceptable to most people. It's there. It has to be there. Yeah, I see it more than I'd like, but I'll deal with it. That, you know, it's that kind of thing. But that aside, the screen itself, the resolution, the viewing angles, it's a great screen. It does not pop like you're used to on something like a Samsung device because it's not AMOLED.
I'm okay with that, actually, because a lot of the times I'll turn it on, you know, I'm blind, so that's maybe part of it. But I'm just, you know, especially first thing in the morning, it's right there. And it's like, okay, just relax a little bit. I'll get to you in a minute. I don't have a problem with the display itself. I'm still getting used to the size and the aspect ratio, and I'm still picking up the Nexus 7 a good little bit, just because, especially because Skyforce, which I'm still playing and still talking about, I know, is still jacked up on Tegra. It was jacked up on the Shield tablet. It's jacked up on this one now. And even the two updates this week haven't fixed it. So hopefully they will. But something still very much about the size of the 7 that I like a lot.
Yeah, the aspect ratio kills it for me, and I complain about that too much because for a lot of people out there, the aspect ratio is what makes it great. That's you know, different strokes for different
people. Yeah, that's a personal thing. I just like to complain.
The hardware itself, I noticed I play Bloons Tower Defense 5, and I play it way too much. I play it when Phil thinks I'm working. I just like to play that game. And I play it a lot on the Nexus 7. And when you get to a certain point as you advance in the game, you place all these monkeys around, and they shoot at balloons. That's the premise of the game. When you have too many monkeys out, especially if they've got crazy stuff like laser guns and stuff, and too many balloons, the Nexus 7 will just choke. Well, I've been able to double that on the Nexus 9, and that, to me, that's, okay, that's the hardware at work right there. You can really work this thing a whole lot harder than anything else before it, and that makes me really love it.
Nexus 7 lags on Skyforce just randomly. Maybe, it might not even be randomly. I might be able to predict when it is, but when it does, I usually end up dying, and that's not fun.
Right.
But on TK1, on the Shield tablet, and on the Nexus 9, perfect. The only problem has been some of the colors and the graphics are messed up.
Well, I'm noticing on some of the games I play, the Nexus 9 is even better than the Shield tablet. And that's what I was hoping to see. That's what I wanted to see. So that makes me feel really good. And another thing, I think that I was really worried, but I think Google and NVIDIA and HTC have done a really good job with the battery. If you are doing just tablet things, if you're just surfing the web or reading AC or on Google Plus or Facebook, the battery is fine. It will last you all day, probably almost 2 days. Now, if you start playing a game and you really work it hard, 4 or 5 hours later, your battery's dead, but that's how it's supposed to work.
And that goes back to the, what's NVIDIA doesn't do Big Little, right? Was that just Qualcomm?
That's a Qualcomm and Samsung. NVIDIA does 4+1.
Right. Are they still 4+1? Okay.
I don't know if it's still 4+1, so I don't want to say it.
But yeah. They
are clocking everything way down, using very little power to just flip around your home screen or in the browser because it doesn't need a lot of power. But when you do want it to have a lot of power, it's there. But that kills your battery. So I think that's working by design, and I'm very pleased with the battery life.
And I want to take them all out to the woodshed for a minute because I think it's a serious issue that you can buy this tablet. I mean, people have it out there. It's not just us, and that's awesome. But you can't get the cover for it yet.
Yep.
And that is ridiculous. If I'm going to spend $400 and $500 on a tablet, And they're, you know, they're sitting there saying, here are these awesome covers that you can't have yet.
It's in the promotional materials on the Play Store.
It's ridiculous. You cannot sell something that costs this much and not give people a way to protect it, especially when it's a really cool way to protect
it. Well, and it's for work, and you can't buy the keyboard accessory that makes it for work.
Well, that's another thing. I better see somebody at a bar writing the next Moby Dick or something with one of these.
Hey, guess who's going to write his next review on one of these, Jerry?
Andrew.
I was going to say Alex, but that works too.
I would do it. I see you every single day using a $99 Logitech keyboard with their iPad in the coffee shop, and they're writing emails, and they're writing, you know, and Google Docs and everything like
and
that.
All of those people need smacked across the back of a head with a $99 Chromebook.
Right, and I'm typing three times as fast on a $200 Chromebook. I get that point, but people are still doing it. And Google obviously knows at some level that that's what they were trying to position the Nexus 9 as, and they came up with this cool, admittedly expensive at $130 keyboard accessory, and then they don't freaking sell it.
If you're that person, I'm going to tell you, run to your nearest Walmart or Best Buy, buy a Nexus 7, and buy the cheapest Chromebook you have. It'll be cheaper than the Nexus 9, and you'll get more work done.
Or just bring the laptop to the, you know, anywhere you're going, because I know these people have laptops too. You don't just buy a $600 iPad and a $100 keyboard case as your only computer.
But I want to get back to the point where I said if it was only $200, everybody should buy it, but at $400, I'm a little iffy. And Phil has just this animated GIF that explains it all. And it's him tapping the back of it, and it bounces up and down. And that's not that big a deal. I mean, There's a reason that cover is not attached in the center. I can't get anybody to tell me that reason, but they tell me there is a reason.
And look, you guys know me. I don't pick up a device immediately trying to find what's wrong with it, probably to a fault a little bit. This was just something that stood out to me, you know, as I used it even that first day.
But that's okay. I mean, there's no reason to nitpick about things that you wouldn't normally come across in a week of using it a normal use. So one is one of those things.
I think it stood out, and to me, it makes it feel a little bit like not an HTC device. You know, especially when you're coming from the M8 and the M7, and I've got the Desire Eye here, actually, which is like just a big, awesome piece of polycarbonate. If you haven't seen this yet, by the way, I need to send it to one of our guys to review. But, I mean, it's just a big piece of polycarb.
Oh, that's pretty.
You're going to like it, Jerry. You're going to like it a lot.
It's like the double-dip kind of cases.
But it's like the M8 that won't be sliding out of my hand.
Kind
of,
yeah.
Send it.
So, it just makes it very much not feel like an HTC device, or that it was designed by a committee, mm-hmm. and these are the things that happen when you do it that way.
And that's... I was just going to say, that's it. I'm afraid that these are design choices and not defects. And if this is the design choice and this is the way it's built, and the corners, the glass is down well, the plastic is attached to the metal well, it's built, it's constructed well. It's just maybe the design choices make it feel, I hate to use the word iPad, but if you hold an iPad mini or a Nexus 7, and then you hold this, you're going to think, well, this isn't built very well.
Completely agree.
Well, and not exactly, built to be twice the price of the Nexus 7. I mean, I didn't use one for as long as you guys have, but, I mean, I had them just holding them right next to each other, and the Nexus 7 feels nicer than the price, and the Nexus 9, you're kind of don't get
that. There you go. That's it exactly. We're used to something that feels so much more than we're paying, and now we're paying so much more, and it doesn't feel like it's more.
And I would buy one. It's a lot of money.
Yep. If you've got that kind of free disposable income, and especially if you're a fan of going through the Nexus beta program, and it's fun. It's fun to get a Nexus device, live through all the bugs for the first 6 months, and then when it's all said and done, you've got the latest, you've got the greatest, it works as well or better than anything else out there, and you can have fun trying lots of cool crap on it.
J.R. Rayfield did a post today saying basically you need to go buy an Nexus 7 while you still can.
And he's right. For most people, he's absolutely right.
And I didn't use the developer preview, the L developer preview on the Nexus 7 at all. I'm real curious to see how Final Software does. It's pretty
solid. Even in the second preview is really solid. Admittedly, not as good as it is on the Nexus 5, but it's good.
I think it'll be really great once they get the last few bugs ironed out.
It's just, it's big. It makes it a little more, it's not a casual a tablet as the Nexus 7 is, I think. I like having the Nexus 7 next to my bed. I can just pick it up, look at something, and especially because with the wireless charger on the Nexus 7, I had it up on that tilt charger.
It's the only reason why mine actually stays on is that it's wireless charging, and I can just leave it there.
And part of me also, we can't forget the Shield tablet. Everybody just kind of glossed over the Shield tablet because the Nexus 7 was so readily available and so cheap. The Shield tablet, the screen is almost as big. It's 8 inches. It's an aspect ratio that people like me are going to enjoy, and it's one you're more familiar with. It's fairly powerful.
$100 cheaper.
It's $100 cheaper.
And it's going to be getting Lollipop very, very soon.
Right, and it's very well supported. If you have one of those things, you get tired of the damn updates that come in.
And the case is actually available for it.
And it attaches with magnets that just
Well, so does the Nexus 9 case. You just, can't get it.
We wouldn't know.
I was looking to see if I had I think the Shield tablet's at home. I don't think it's here in the office. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad people are getting them already, but just be careful with them. It's ridiculous that you can't buy something to protect it. And inexcusable, if you ask me. Yeah,
I think I sum it up in our review, which will get posted shortly. We're just about done. I wanted to spend enough time. I don't want to just crank out 3 days of
bullshit. Well, and especially, I mean, that's worth mentioning. I mean, I used it for, the half a week before the embargo was supposed to lift. And again, we don't really talk about embargoes generally. But enough people I know had asked, hey, is your tablet working okay? Because mine's not, and I can't do anything with it. Mine was fine. But Google pushed out, a full update on Sunday, last Sunday. Full 800 megabytes, and that sealed it for me. It's like, nope. Not worrying about
which
the embargo.
Which happened to be the same size as the factory image, so. Yeah.
But it's one of those things, I won't tell you that it's a bad tablet, because I think in the end the good outweighs the bad, but I can't tell you to run out and buy one right away, because it's not $199 anymore.
Yeah, that's the difference to me, I think. What else? I still can't get too much into the Nexus 6 yet. We're getting there. It's still a really big Moto X with Lollipop on it.
I'm enjoying it. I'll say that much, but the first thing in my mind every time I pick it up is, wow, this is still really, really big.
Yeah.
And it's a similar issue that we're having with the 9 right now, isn't it? That it's just less of a mainstream size, it would seem, for a tablet that you would expect to go on Google Play and buy. And I don't know whether, with the way the Nexus program is evolving, whether we're eventually going to expect to see a new 5-inch phone or a new 7-inch tablet, or whether we're just going to evolve in a completely different direction. But it seems to me we need something to replace those two devices. We can't just go with a 6-inch phone and 9-inch tablet, because that's kind of... those are strange sizes to me.
I would not be surprised if early next year Google announced that they're working on a Nexus 5 replacement.
Absolutely. Maybe around the time Qualcomm is done with its 64-bit stuff.
They almost have to be.
Yeah. I mean, what's going to be the assuming Android Silver is dead, what is going to be the next Nexus phone? Are we going to stay at 6 inches forever?
I don't think you can.
You can't really, can you?
And that's something I've been thinking about as I'm writing this Nexus 6 review. I can easily say it's too big, and for me it's too big. Mm-hmm. I've said that about a lot of phones, though, and so have a lot of other people, and the phones keep getting bigger. So obviously people are buying them, but you've got to hit a point where, and I think this is it, I really do. But I mean, go back to the HD2, back in the Winmo days, we're like, oh, this is too big. And, that was still a large phone even by today's standards. But in the, and then the Evo 4G, 4.4
Three. Yeah. It's a trap to fall into talking about phone size in terms of screen size, though. It's about the measurements, not necessarily the screen.
Right.
And especially as I've just been, holding the Nexus 9 or Nexus. I keep calling it the 9. That's how big it feels to me. Holding the 6 versus the Moto X, or holding the 6 versus an iPhone 6 Plus. The 6 Plus is easier for me to hold. I don't use one. I don't have one just laying here, but I've held them side by side, and just because of the shape of the thing. And it very much goes in the same way that the HTC One M8 is a little slippery to hold and a little tough for me to hold without a case because of the way it slopes and because how thin the sides are. And
it's really tall, too.
Yeah.
Which makes you, you're reaching more. And, I mean, we could talk about the Droid Turbo a little bit in a little bit, but that's kind of one where it has the same screen size as the Moto X, but it's the overall dimensions that make it tougher to hold than the Moto X.
Let's talk about the Droid Turbo. I do want to say I also have a feeling that the software we have on the Nexus 6 is going to get a pretty decent update relatively soon. And knowing the way things work, it'll probably be right about the time we're ready to publish the review. There are just some bugs in there. And I really want to see if some of the animations speed up a little bit. The animations are beautiful. They really are nice. I have a feeling I don't want to say sluggish, but they feel purposefully timed.
Yep.
Put it that way.
There's a little bit of that on the Nexus 5 in the current preview as well.
Yeah.
Where it's just almost like you're seeing a little bit too much of the animation and you're spending a little bit too long not getting to the thing that you want to be doing.
Yeah, so I kind of want to see if that changes some. But again, we're not going too much into the Nexus 6 yet.
No, I do want to say, though, none of these bugs are showstoppers. It's not like anything you read about it now is going to be completely different. It's just some really...
Remember the iPhone had a lot of that with iOS 6, didn't it, when they first made that big switch?
They had to tweak a lot of the interface, and Google will have to tweak. They'll spend another year tweaking this.
I still need to do a post. I went back. They published Matias Duarte's keynote from the user experience something or other. I've got it in my notes here.
Matias, if you watch our podcast, do not touch Gmail on the web. don't do it.
You want me to read the part? Yeah, let me just read the part that really stood out to me. And it's like an hour and a half long keynote. And a lot of it was like 2 or 3 weeks after Google I.O., which is what made it all sound so familiar. We just heard a lot of it. But what really stood out to me was this part about Gmail. He said, "In my experience at Google, thinking mobile first has been a trap. Just even thinking mobile separate has been a trap. Let's look at Gmail. Looks like it came from two different planets, depending on whether you access it from mobile or access it from the desktop. The branding is different. The styling is different. Primary function, it goes into some examples of things that are different." He says, "What are we doing? Is this like some kind of like UX practical joke? Buy into Gmail. It's a great product. You just have to learn the UI twice." And I was cracking up at this because it's like he's saying the emperor is naked.
Well, it's good to hear him say that.
It's really good, especially because as we are transitioning to Lollipop, and I'm still calling it L, by the way, so when I call it L, don't mind me. But especially as we're transitioning an OS, and we're transitioning all these Google apps at the same time, right? So the calendar app we got to show off last week, and it's beautiful. I like it a lot. It looks a lot like Inbox does, right? Which this is all starting to make sense a little bit.
Yeah.
You've got all these other Google apps that are transitioning as well, and I don't think they're done yet, guys. I think this is still way early in the days of Google turning this big design ship, and that this time next year, things are going to look really different and act really different. And as much as I love, my workflow in Gmail and just seeing lines of text and messages and stuff, I do love the idea of Inbox, and I do love the idea of doing things differently. And I think we need to, get ready and be comfortable being uncomfortable for a little bit.
And like you say, it is a big ship, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And to think of Google Apps as ever being done is maybe a bit of a trap as well. We all know how much things changed in the years between ICS and Jelly Bean and KitKat. It's a constant process of change. You're probably not going to see the same, complete overhaul that you get when an app suddenly jumps into Material Mode. But with others, maybe like Maps with Google Docs, Google Drive, it's going to be more of a gradual transition. And we're just now starting to turn the corner with the apps that we're seeing in Lollipop on the new Nexus devices.
I mean, I tell you, in the next couple of weeks, you're going to see all these posts pointing out all these little things that aren't quite right or aren't quite done or don't quite matchup. I used one example in our calendar post that we did for the new calendar app, and that's the drawer, you know, and actually I think it's really cool. In the calendar app, the settings, and I think it's helper, report, or whatever it is, at the bottom of the drawer, it does not scroll. It just sits there the way I think it should. You know, it was either Gmail or Google Plus I showed. No, it was Gmail, because Google Plus is still totally off that reservation and doing something different.
A little bit. It has, if you load it on Lollipop, it does have all the right animations that you don't get in KitKat, which is quite nice, but it's still a little bit different.
The designers at Google stood up and said that material design is not about following these steps exactly and making every app look the same. There are plenty of ways to do things like your settings pane and your, you know, edit functions. And we have guidelines out there, so even if it looks different, it feels the same. I don't get all these people that are not, every Google app looks different, blah, blah, blah. Well, maybe they're supposed to look damn different. They all look good.
I think there should. There just needs to be consistency in the functionality for something. You know, well, where you put your settings button in a family of apps should probably be in the same
correct place. But when you open those settings, if the animation and the display is different, maybe that's by design. I have a feeling it might be.
Yeah. I don't know. Go and look at where Google Earth is right now and then drag that menu out of the side and then just shoot yourself in the face because that's horribly done. I don't know how that got into production. It looked like a very quick upgrade in that app.
I'm just afraid if they find one way and they decide, okay, all the apps are going to look this way and then all the developers try to follow in step, we're going to miss something that would be much better and much cooler because nobody wants to try it.
Oh, I don't want 100 apps that all look the same. Going back to the Duarte quote, he, you know, said, how could anybody decide to do that? Well, it's obviously because nobody decided to do that. We had two different teams that were each working separately, each optimizing for their own context, each optimizing for their own platform, for their own problems. And every new screen that we add into the mix is going to multiply that problem. So that's what really makes me excited, that we're going to get this much more cohesive experience between the web, and that's where Polymer comes in, Android TV, and I still am super excited for Android Auto and CarPlay as well on the iOS side, because God, if there's an industry that's ever needed a kick in the butt, it's vehicle infotainment. I'm excited, and it's still going to be bumpy, and that's why I'm not sweating every little pixel right now.
I just don't want it to turn into Inbox on the web. Come on. Neither do you. Come on.
No, I don't think I want it to turn into Inbox, but I think that might be an option. It might well be.
And I'm good with an option. I just want the power user option to keep it like we have now. I need my line after line of text. And if you take that away and give me nice, pretty cards, I'm not going to be as functional.
Yeah. So let's talk Joy Turbo a little bit, because Andrew still has it there.
Pew, pew, pew.
So I've been told it's still there. What do you want to know? That wasn't summarized in the very nice review.
Have you been zapping Droid Zap to your Zap Zone?
So, I mean, the thing about Droid Zap, it's fun to make fun of it because the name is horrible and the branding is terrible and all that. But it actually does things. It's the easiest way to throw a picture to a Chromecast that's baked into your phone. You just pull open, you just hit the Chromecast button, send a picture, and it's on your TV. And it's also on everybody else's phones that has the Droid Zap app installed. Now, the problem is nobody has the Droid Zap app installed.
And I can't think of an instance where I would need everybody with the phone to be looking at the picture that's also on the TV in the room with everybody.
Right, and you know what you do? You just take your phone and you hand it to the person and they look at the picture for 15 seconds and hand it back to you. So it's, and then you're done. You know, you're done before you could have even looked for the Droid Zap app in the Play Store. That is the least exciting piece of the Droid Turbo is Droid Zap.
I like that phone a lot. I really do like that phone a lot.
And I expected it to be, so going into the review, I expected it to be more of a slam dunk over the Moto X. Like, you know, why would you ever choose the Moto X on Verizon? But the thing is, it doesn't exactly do anything. My conclusion was it doesn't do anything that the Moto X doesn't do except for have a huge battery. The camera is higher resolution, but takes very similar photos. All the higher end internals are nice, but right now they don't do anything better you know, speed is the same, performance is the same as the Moto X, and there's no indication that moving to Lollipop, Droid Turbo is just going to run it any number of percentage, you know, faster than the Moto X will. And the screen is higher resolution, but doesn't actually look much better at normal distances. So it's kind of like
big-ass battery.
A huge, huge battery. That was pretty much what it is.
That was one of the complaints that people had with the Moto X was that...
I hear a lot of people talk about how that battery is going to be poor, but everybody with the phone saying it's fine.
Well, not everyone with a phone. Few reviews say otherwise.
I don't trust reviewers. We all suck.
I mean,
well, look. I mean,
it's just numbers.
And again, you're talking capacity versus battery life, and I can't stress enough how different those two things are. You see all these ridiculous graphs. This phone that has the largest battery has the best battery life. No, it has the longest battery life because it has the biggest battery. That's
right.
It goes back to that watt hours discussion we had, right, Jerry?
And Motorola doesn't have, you know, ultra power saving mode or anything like that. It doesn't need it on the Droid Turbo.
Well, your ultra power saving mode is Moto Display, basically, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, pretty much.
And using Moto Display and using a AMOLED display. But that being said, you can have full brightness and 7 hours of screen on time and your battery is still not dead on the Droid Turbo. I mean, they're just saying it by having a huge battery that's, I mean, we're talking 3,900 milliamp hours versus 2,300 on the Moto X. The downside of that, the other side of it is now your phone is heavy and thick around, you know, the edges and has this chin on the bottom that makes it a little tougher to hold than the Moto X, even though it's the same screen size.
I know I can be out all day long running around places with good reception and places with poor reception, and you guys just bugging the piss out of me on my Hangouts. And I get home at 11 o'clock, midnight or so, and I still got 15, 20, 30% left on my battery on the Moto X. I can only imagine on the Turbo that, you know, I'd have 60% left and could do it all a second day. I see the draw in that.
Yeah, what I found was roughly that. I would never have less than 50% battery at the end of the day, no matter what. No matter what I did, even if I was out, I was tethering for an hour or two, streaming music, you know, YouTube videos. It didn't matter that the graph just went down at the same rate. But my whole thing was, you know, so you go to bed with 50% battery. So now you wake up and you've lost 10 or 15% overnight. So now you're at 35%. You can't go a whole day the next day in 35%. So you're going to have to charge at some point. And everybody just charges their phone at night. So I understand if you're an extremely heavy user and you need to tether your phone for 3 hours a day, and that's going to destroy the battery on one of your, or, you know, you will have a 45-minute lunch break and you want to watch a TV show, and that's going to take a hit to the battery. The Droid Turbo is nice for that.
But and for you know what's really making a difference for me with all that is the turbo charging.
Yeah, I mean, but even then, so turbo charging is important on the Moto X. It's not important on the Droid Turbo because it just doesn't matter. You're never going to need to top it up during the day. So it almost doesn't matter that it has the turbo charger in the box or has Qi charging. Qi charging is cool and all, but when you have a 3,900 milliamp hour battery, Qi charging doesn't top up the battery any meaningful amount. If you set it on there for a half hour, it doesn't make a difference. So it's kind of like overkill to have all of these extra things.
You almost wish that the Qi charging was on the smaller battery on the Moto X.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, which is why I like it on the Nexus 5, because if I'm home, you know, I just put it on the charger and it's always topped up. The Droid Turbo, not having to worry about the battery is nice. Ever worry about the battery no matter what.
Those capacitive buttons. Well, we saw something about a capacitive button issue today with the new Gmail app and menu buttons.
Yeah, what came out of that? I missed the answer.
The setting is there. It was just lost. I couldn't find it.
And the thing about capacitive buttons, what that brought up, the issue was that people are used to being able to long press the menu button or the recents key on Samsung phones and have it pop up a menu. But the whole issue is that capacitive keys are hidden, you know, hiding functions sometimes. And I think we brought it up, as soon as Lollipop hits the Droid Turbo, your buttons aren't going to match what they would be if they were on-screen buttons, and now they look kind of funny. And they just, they're just there all the time, and I accidentally hit the capacitive keys when I pull the menu, you know, when you're trying to do Google Now and you hit the home button accidentally, or you're pulling down the notification shade, you accidentally hit the home button, you're playing a game, you accidentally hit the back key. It's, there's just no reason to have them there anymore, and it's kind of a, one of the small downsides of the Turbo that kind of adds up.
I worry because they're fixed. They will always be the same no matter what the software does. And you know how Google is. Man, they like to change those freaking buttons every 6 months, it seems. And that would just be a problem. Other than that, I would prefer capacitive buttons.
And the thing is, the capacitive keys in this case don't offer you any, they don't offer you any benefit other than just not taking up a small portion of the screen. Well, you could just make the screen larger and put them on screen. So, I mean, you don't get the benefit that some people think of a Samsung phone where you have the fingerprint sensor and the home button, or people like the clicky home button.
Well, and they flat out said at the event in New York that we wanted people to get the most out of the display size. That's why.
Yeah. Which is kind of BS. Because the times that you want the full screen, the buttons hide.
Are you trying to say that a manufacturer would give us a line and tell us what they want us to hear?
Yeah, the Galaxy Nexus has the best camera I've ever seen, too. So, anyways, this is just going around in circles, but the big thing is that the Droid Turbo is a really nice phone, but if you bought a Moto X instead, you're not going to be upset that you don't have a Droid Turbo.
Spend the money and buy a fast charger then, and you're pretty much in the same...
Well, and the Droid Turbo is $100 more than the Moto X, so...
Have I mentioned how much smaller my Moto X feels these days?
Oh, yeah. Holding the Nexus 6 makes me think that maybe I can deal with the size of the new Moto.
Not just that, but even the G3 is smaller, and the Note 4 doesn't feel quite as big. I bought a Note 4. I need to try it. What should I use at the Samsung Developer Conference next week? Should I use a Samsung phone or something totally off G3. The reservation?
You should use that M8i.
I was going to send it to Derek to review.
Hey, that'd be neat. Do that.
Okay. That's what I will do.
I'm bringing an iPhone next week.
No. I just have no desire to try an iPhone again. The only thing I'm jealous of is the camera.
I know the Note 4's got a pretty good camera.
Yeah, no, and that's why I was asking, actually, because I really want to try that camera on that.
I don't know from what I have seen, not just from you, but from others. I'm thinking if you want a really, really good camera that nobody seems to talk about, you buy an Xperia.
What do you mean nobody talks about? I used it for a week.
But it's pretty good.
It doesn't come up like Samsung and Apple does when you...
Well, just because you can't buy them here.
Yeah.
And there's this weird... I mean, you guys haven't had the... You didn't really get the Z2. I guess T-Mo kind of got the Z1.
I got it on Verizon a couple weeks ago.
Well, yeah. But my point is that... That's the same camera across all three devices, basically. It's a year-old camera. It was pretty good a year ago. Holy ups next to the devices we have now, the iPhone 6 and the Note 4. It's still pretty good, but it's not as good as those devices. It's a year out of step.
I just know those low light... I think I shared them with you guys, didn't I? Those low light pics that somebody put on Imgur from the Z3. Yes. That was freaking amazing. That's as good as I can take with a $1,900 Nikon camera. And that impressed the dog snot out of me.
Blah, 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 blah. Anything else big news-wise this week? Nothing I can think of. Should we do some more Q&A? We'll get out of here.
Let's do it.
Sam wants to know, since you've been using the new Nexus 6 and the new stock Messenger app, is there any reason to switch to this app instead of using Hangouts? I'm not using the Messenger app because I'm using Hangouts because I use Google Voice, but... I mean, I flipped through it. I looked at it. It looks like a nice new Messenger app that does messages. But I'm using Google Voice, so I need...
I thought it looked just like the old Messenger app with a pretty new face.
You know, I mean, it's not going to do anything different, is it?
Yeah.
Well, it can't. What can it do differently? It needs to do a certain set of functions.
It's just do SMS and MMS and call it a day.
It has this nice thing where it kind of slides up and you can view a picture of your, like a live preview from the camera in real time, or you can attach photos from there. So it's prettied up and it looks nice, and you have different colors depending on which thread you're in. But it is basically just a, you know, just an SMS app.
And like Phil said, you're talking to people who haven't used SMS apps in years.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice. You use it. Absolutely. But no, I haven't been using it because I still need Google Voice.
It's my wife uses SMS separate from Hangouts.
Yep.
For her, that works really well because she uses a lot, does a lot of texting, and doesn't want that mixed in with Hangouts to come from the wrong place. So it's nice to see the app update.
I kind of think I like it in the separate app still. It's not 100%. It's better than it was when it first launched, and Andrew and I were in Vegas trying to figure it out. But it's still a little clunky. I mean, and especially on the desktop. And you know, well, and I don't have the good extension thing because we're always Mac. No,
you do have the good extension.
Oh yeah.
I tried it on the Chromebook, and it's. The fact that you can't hide it's just popped up on top of whatever else you're doing, and there's no indication when new messages come in. It's horrendous.
Oh, Jason has an interesting question. How does the Dexys Player handle multiple accounts? Can my wife and I both sign in with our Google accounts and access content from either? So let's take a look, actually, because you sign in with your Google account when you first fire up the thing. All right, so you can. It looks like you can remove the account and then sign back in. So I don't know. I'll play with that a little bit and see. I don't think it's totally meant to do that.
It's interesting because we have multi-user came to the phones.
Yeah, I'll have to play with that some more. Where you can do it is with the YouTube app. Oh, why it makes me push the button every time to go down the all the subscriptions? But you can sign out on YouTube, and when you sign back in. It gives you the option which channel you want to use, so that's kind of cool. If you have multiple channels, if you don't have multiple channels.
But those are all the ones that are tied to your one Google account.
You're right. And here's another one of those little things that doesn't quite work on here. So you've got all these options, right? So I choose, you know, connectedly, or I choose my account, but then I have to go back down and hit OK. That's fixable.
The app probably wasn't written with the player in mind.
Right.
They'll tweak it.
No, that's a good question. But yeah, it's not really set up quite to do that. John Paul says, Phil Beard!
I have one that's actually a question.
I hope it's Jeff, the next one in line.
Oh, I don't know. Jeff says, can someone explain the problem with simultaneous call-in data with the Nexus 6 and the Droid Turbo on Verizon? Will it only be resolved if Voice over LTE is enabled?
Oh, I can answer that.
Go ahead, Phil.
The answer is Verizon.
Well, that's the answer is
the answer.
The answer is they built a phone that just doesn't have separate radios, so, like most phones right now, and they're kind of just banking on the fact that they're going to have voice over LTE. So, yeah, right now you make a phone call, you lose all your data, and that kind of sucks.
Can you have voice and data at the same time on Sprint?
It depends on the device if they have the separate bands.
Okay, with the Nexus 6, can you have voice?
I don't know.
Because that's the determining factor. If you can, then yes, this is 100% Verizon.
No, I don't think I think the case is that the Nexus 6 is just like most other phones that are being released, and they don't have separate radios.
One radio.
Which was part of the problem. Everybody complained about having separate radios because it wasted battery life.
And remember, the Z3V was the same way, too. You get this little pop-up that says, data is shutting off while you're making a phone call.
Right. They're banking on the fact that they're going to have voice over LTE out, and then you're going to have simultaneous voice and data. Or just use AT&T or T-Mobile and use HSPA.
So Anthony asks, what is the deal with the Verizon and the Nexus 6? Why the cryptic omission in documents and Google announcements? Because Verizon. Go back to the Nexus 1 announcement. Nexus 1 was going to be on Verizon. It never was on Verizon. It was right there from the very beginning. Look at the Nexus 7 last year. Yeah. You know, Verizon announces things when Verizon wants to. Period. That's just the way it is.
I think right now, Verizon knows they can make a crap ton of money on the Note 4. They don't care about anything else. When they can't make that level of money anymore, they'll worry about ushering a new one in that they can make money on. That's what they do best, is make lots and lots and lots of money.
Vincent asks, why are manufacturers so slow to increase the internal storage on most devices? These devices are positioned to do everything, and 16 gigabytes is way too slim to have a usable cache of games, offline reading, music, and so on. I don't think they're slow. They just don't.
Yeah.
I understand why Samsung and Sony would not want to do it, but that question, I'm right at HTC. Why can't I buy a 128 gigabyte M8? It's technically possible. Why don't you offer one and take my money?
Because they look at the numbers and how many people they think would buy one. They say, all right, we're not going to do it. I mean, that's it. They predict how many they're going to sell of these things at certain price points.
And when you don't have the scale of selling 20, 30 million phones, that percentage of people, you know, would be the same across the whole scale. So, you know, if you're only going to sell a million phones,
right,
you know, you don't want to make a separate SKU for 1,000 people.
Yeah, and you have to buy the stuff in bulk. Alex, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that in the US, at least, you get the option to buy a 32 or 64 gig model sometimes. Over here, basically, the 16 is the only one we get. And, you know, even if you're buying unlocked, there is basically only one retailer selling unlocked on the high street right now, and they just don't offer them.
Right. Here, every Note 4 is 32 gig, which is nice. Droid Turbo is 32. A few other phones are 32 only.
32 should be the minimum now.
I have a 32 option. I mean,
I got a feeling 32. Sorry, I got a feeling 32 will be the minimum next year. I think we're past 16 at this point, especially with art and all this other stuff coming in.
When the Nexus factory image is 800 megabytes, 32 is the bare minimum. I want 64.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit of a different situation, but we're seeing, you know, people have update issues on their 8 gig phones that they have, you know, where you can't, you can't update your OS, you can't download a game because it needs to, you know, you think, oh, I have, you know, 1 gig free. Well, you have to download a big file and then decompress it and then install it, and that creates a lot of other files, and people don't understand the issue there. So, yeah, 32 probably should be the minimum, even though I'm somebody that is fine with 16 on a regular basis.
I could get by with 8, you know, as long as the OS will fit. Everything I have is in the cloud, but I see the bigger picture, and you want to build a phone and offer all this great cool stuff you can do with it. Damn it, the answer is not SD cards. The answer is put a great big, quote, hard drive in the phone.
Yep. Sorry, I was looking at the, my kid has been running around with the Re camera.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I was thinking, hey, you know, before I send this to Derek today, I should probably, you know, see what pictures are on it. We did have a little discussion about taking pictures when people don't have pants on. Taylor asks, Touch ID seems really useful for unlocking a device, password managers like LastPass and NFC payments. Fingerprint scanners were originally dubbed as a gimmick. Have you changed your opinion on them, and will they be more prominent on future Android devices? Let me answer that thusly. Here is the back of the Nexus 6. Here's the back of the Moto X. Remember how we talked about how once upon a time there was supposed to be something there and there's not? That's all I'm saying. I'm not really sure what that meant.
I've used the one on the Note 4. I don't know if they fixed up the software a little bit coming from the GS5 because it's the same part, but it works a bit better. But the problem is it's still one of those swipey ones.
Yeah, it's still the motion and the position is a problem. It's not a natural place for your phone to be when you're holding it like this.
Right, and every manufacturer has that huge bezel at the bottom like the iPhone does for a circular fingerprint sensor like that, or even for an oblong home button like the Note does. So then you're talking about putting on the back. Now it's kind of awkward to reach back there, and everybody's hands are different sizes, and it gets to be a little weird. So there's kind of not necessarily a good place to put it, especially a swiping one. And it's just kind of for what? To unlock your phone, you know, that much faster, or authenticate two or three apps that use it? I mean, I just don't see
the best implementation that I've seen of that so far is still Huawei's. It's basically a good version of what HTC was trying to do with the One Max. It's around the back. It isn't a swipey one, but it's a touch-activated one, works in any direction. And it's the only one I've seen on an Android phone where the success rate is good enough that the handful of times it doesn't work is basically no big deal.
Right.
Step away from the internet. find the people that don't know what software version they're running, only have 10 apps, don't, you know, just normal people, none of them use it. Touch ID, nobody uses it. I can't use it. It doesn't work for me. This is a bubble we're creating, and outside of that bubble, none of this is a big deal. Nobody uses it.
And I've had, you know, friends who use iPhones say the same thing. You know, say Touch ID just works for me half the time, doesn't work the other half the time. You know, a couple of years, maybe it'll be a thing, and I certainly hope it gets better.
I mean, and even then, you know, with it not, you know, some small number of people on the iPhone using it, that's like a perfect setup for it, too. That's absolutely ideal in that it's part of the setup process. They already have the home button there. You're already pushing the home button to turn the screen on. It's like the least amount of friction possible to using it, and it's still not, you know, 80% of people with the ability use it or anything like that.
And that'll get better. We want it to work. We want everybody to use it because it's a cool technology thing. That's what we like. And the people listening to this, you're listening to this because you like cool technology stuff. You probably use it if you have it and you want everybody else to use it. But it needs to get easier. And like Andrew said, it's pretty easy on the iPhone, you know, 5S and 6, but it still needs to get even easier.
All right, let's speed through some of these other ones. C. Brian Cantrell wants to know why no restart option when you long press a power button on Nexus devices. Still, why not?
Because you shouldn't need it?
Because if you have to restart your phone that often, then you've spent too much time putting that button in there rather than fixing your operating system.
Christopher wants to know, why do you think companies give outlets review units with non-final software, even though they know many will publish day one reviews without updating them after the final software is released? I mean, Nexus is a special thing a little bit, I think, and we kind of go into it understanding. But no, I agree. And I think most of the companies out there, I think all the companies out there try to get you as final software as you can get. Sometimes they're bugs, sometimes they're still working on it. There are set dates that this stuff has to happen, and occasionally engineering and software don't meet up, and that's what happens. And you just end up on these hard, hard timelines. Right? Descent? Yes? No?
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. Nobody wants you to write a review based on bad software. It just kind of happens sometimes.
It's kind of an issue of hands, one hand not talking to the other, and then...
No, not even that. I think it's just deadlines not meeting up.
And, you know, you get in a rush, it looks like it works, it looks complete, you send it out the door, and then somebody like Phil or Jerry does something unthought of, and it's broken.
It happens. I'll speak out of school a little bit. I had to do an old school ROM flash on this Desire Eye as soon as I got it because they spotted something. And HTC was quick about it, and they said, hey, we caught something in the last minute. Here it is. Have at it. So that was kind of fun, actually. Drift Slave and secondarily Ryan Saldana. Moto 360 or G-Watch R are really what's the best Android Wear watch? Should I wait? I tell you, I'm liking the Smartwatch 3 a lot. I've been wearing it for a week now. And I still have it on.
Looks like a smartwatch.
Why the hell can you take it out of here? Like, what is the purpose of that? You can...
That's the way Sony does their band.
You can just totally undo it and pop it in a new one, I guess.
Not the same as the Gear S, right?
Never going to do.
So you can pop out the bands without using tools.
You can buy one that says Square E on the bottom.
Okay.
G-Watch.
Fine. I mean, it's a cool watch, though. I like it. I really want to wear the Zen watch for a while.
I want you to leave the GPS on all day on that Sony.
I need to do that this weekend.
I haven't done that yet. The burn mark on your wrist is in.
Oh, yeah, no. So we're going to have an interesting time trying to pick the best smartwatch. I honestly don't know right now.
I think the Zen watch is going to be the... Sorry, God.
No, I was saying I still use my G watch, and I haven't said, man, this thing is ugly, or I absolutely need something nicer, because when I want to wear a nicer watch, I have watches that look better than any of the available Android Wear watches.
There you go.
Vincent wants to know, why do most tech review sites not provide a follow-up review to devices that receive major updates? Probably like everybody else, you got to move on to the next thing, though I'm absolutely making it a point for us to go back to these, quote, older devices as they start getting lollipop. Mm-hmm. I think we have to. The 2013 Moto X... the 2014 Moto X, the
Nexus 5.
Yeah, the Nexus 5. The Note. I mean, we're going to do as much as we can, I think.
I mean, it's something we've done the past year, even a couple of months on with some of the early devices from this year.
And I think it's definitely a lot more important to do now because this is a much bigger update than 4.3 to 4.4 was, or even 4.2 to 4.4. It's just a very different shift. So, yeah, we're going to do it.
I have one more from Ryan that says, any chance we'll see the Motorola Moto Max officially on T-Mobile or AT&T? I think snowball's chance in hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, someone asked the same about the UK release. I think it was announced in South America this week.
Specifically.
Yeah. I think if it was going to happen internationally, it would have happened internationally. I think it's just, it's right. Verizon and it's South America, and that's probably going
to
be it.
Yeah, I don't think you do a launch event in Brazil to launch it in the UK and US.
Well, they would have done. Yeah, they would have done satellite events if that was the case.
Carl asks, how did the lollipop battery bug emerge so late in the game?
What lollipop battery bug?
Yeah,
it runs fine on the only device that runs lollipop.
Yep. Here's the thing about that, and we've talked about this over and over again. You know, it's great that they've done these developer previews. I love that Google does it. You know, it's bug stuff out in the open like that. But you don't get to hold it against them and say something's delayed if they catch it before release and before they update a device that they don't have a date for updating.
When that happens, it isn't news.
Right. That's people trolling these bug reports and saying, hey, this is fixed and it hasn't been delayed. There's no date for it. There's internal stuff and off the record stuff, but that doesn't count. No, I'm glad they fixed it, but it is like I said in Google Plus, you know, the headline should have been Google fixes bug found in unreleased code that's going to be pushed to a device that doesn't have a public date. I mean, you know, it's just relax.
I hope you're telling me that Google is improving on something they haven't released yet.
I hope they don't put a developer preview out next year.
Jerry and I were just talking about this. Yeah,
this is more trouble than it's worth.
I'm glad they did it. I think I would, you know, we knew this was going to happen.
They did it for the people that actually needed it.
Yeah, we knew this was going to happen.
Yep.
And they're not going to make the barrier to entry any more difficult than they already have. And it's not like Apple's is tough to get, you know, you pay your $100, poof, you're a developer, just like here.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a developer preview. It's not, what does Microsoft call their Windows previews? They call them consumer betas, right?
Abandon hope, all ye who enter here.
Yeah, I mean, and that's different.
And they don't even have a money restriction for being a quote-unquote developer anymore. So
but that, you know, that's the thing. If you install some sort of early beta Windows 7 build when they first were out, and it was absolute garbage, you accepted that because, well, this is some sort of weird early beta. But all of a sudden now with your Nexus 5, it's like, well, there are huge bugs. They're going to have to make delays. Nope. It's the same stinking thing.
I think they were pretty upfront, too, that this is a developer preview. Things will be broken.
And they tell you that when you start it up for the first time.
Yeah, and yeah. Just because somebody, you know, has a public bug report, you know, that doesn't change the fact that it's still a developer preview and they're updating code and they haven't said when they're going to push these updates to devices. I saw so many headlines this week that said, you know, Android Lollipop is rolling out. Well, and that look at how we started this podcast. Yes, but like, not really. Yeah. You have to remember how it, you know, there are steps that happens, right? They announce it. It has to get pushed to AOSP. You know, for all the licensing purposes, the manufacturers, yes, have been working with this code for a long time. They still have to push out their updates separately, which is different. Google's going to put out its factory images for the Nexus devices. It's going to push the OTAs. These are all separate steps, and we don't have dates for any of them, really. Right?
Right. When the 12 rolls around and the Nexus 6 is commercially available at carrier stores, then, you know, we'll talk about maybe seeing some updates start to push out or when they might be happening. But right now, you are talking, you might as well have been 2 months ago. It's not there. It's not ready. It's not done. It's not happening.
It was funny how many people I saw, you know, I hate that we even did those rumory posts, you know, Samsung to update its devices in November, and people, that's too late. Too late.
The Nexus 6 isn't even on sale yet.
Yeah, just stop. It's coming. It's never as quick as we want. You know, I get that, but a little patience isn't going to kill anyone. There are steps that have to be done.
Any update you get for any phone, except maybe the Motos, that if you get it before the end of the year, you're going to wish you hadn't got it in the first day.
Stop it.
No, I'm serious. You know, there's a lot of work here, and if they need an extra 30 days, give them the extra 30 days and don't climb all over them on Twitter and Facebook.
And if they're, you know, a week late, that's not the end of the world either. I would rather them be a week late or 2 weeks late or three than push out a bad update. It is a big deal to push out a bad update. They need to be right. Now I'm all worked up.
Well, I just, I sometimes I worry, does Samsung rush things to keep the fans satisfied a little bit? I mean, I hope not. I hope they just say, well, stop reading Facebook and continue to work on your code. And it, you get it when it's done and you get it when it's right.
I think if there's anyone putting pressure on Samsung for faster updates, it's not Facebook.
Well, that was just an example. Stop reading Android Central.
I think he meant the people on Facebook and not
Facebook itself. Yes. There are other pressure that people want faster updates. I'm sure Google has a hand in there. They want people to get code faster. And they were saying on Google I/O that you know, the fact that we do a developer preview this year means we don't have to be as secretive with stuff. And we've already seen builds leak out from Samsung, and HTC has their 90-day window now. But yeah, we'll see how they go. I think I wouldn't be too surprised if we saw a handful of non-Nexus, non-Motorola updates before the end of the year.
Looking in my email, Robert wrote, "For Jerry, regarding SD cards."
This will be good.
Yeah, you've never gotten an email like that before, right?
The short version is... I'm trying to do the short version. Too long, didn't read. What's stopping us from using a different file system for SD cards that supports permissions so that it works better with Android?
Take it out, plug it into your computer, and that will answer your question.
I would now like to read my response to Robert in all capital letters. Phil can answer this! And I answered him in a single sentence, because then it wouldn't work in every other computer.
Right. An SD card needs to work in not just a computer. It needs to work in a camera.
Right.
It needs to work in a music player. And everybody just uses the FAT file system. There you go. It works.
It's popping through the rest of these. That's the only email we're going to do. Phil answered an email question for Jerry. We're going to end on a high note, I think. Well, I was proud of myself.
Well, yay. See, you're learning.
I knew that answer. I even knew it the right way.
You teach me how to write and how to use utensils correctly at the table, and I'll teach you about SD cards.
And with that, how about we segue into sticking a fork in it?
Sounds good.
Thank you, Jerry. All right, if you want, you can email us, podcast@androidcentral.com. Find us all on the Twitters and Google Pluses and Instagrams. We need to do some more Instagram stuff. It's been a little while. I know we've all been very busy. What else? Where can you find us? I'll just be sitting here. Hey, next week we are at the Samsung Developer Conference, Tuesday through Thursday.
That's
right. Let me see if they put our page up yet. It should be /SDC14.
I thought it was just /SDC.
Nope, not up yet. So hopefully that will be up shortly. But yeah, we're not doing quite as live as we did last year, but we will absolutely be there. We're still the official media partner. Should be interesting. A lot of connected home stuff this year in the VR stuff. Be fun to.
Is it going
to
be a bigger event for sure?
Yeah, it's at Moscone in San Francisco. So if you're around, say hi. If you haven't registered yet, you still get a little time to do so. That's where we will be, but we will be back in time for podcast on Friday. Barely. My eyes won't be open.
Well, I have a shorter flight, so I'll be home. Well,
I go to Los Angeles first. I don't know what I did wrong there. I know exactly what I did wrong there.
Yeah, I was going to say I was there. Yeah, thank you.
That's the first time I've ever accidentally booked a flight for the wrong city. That's what happened.
You always know you did something wrong when you have to go to Los Angeles.
Oh, yes. So that's what we are doing. And with that, I think we'll see you all next week.
Bye-bye.
See you later.